Welcome to the Reimagine Mobility Podcast. I'm here with Paul Grisch from Preact. Paul, we go a ways back, and I'm pretty sure our listeners will be very much interested to hear your story of where you're coming from, what you've done, and certainly what the current company that you're leading is doing. And then after that short intro, then let's jump in together and explore here how we reimagine mobility together.
All right. Sounds good. And yeah, we do go back a ways. And my background, for those people who don't know, I'm a car guy my whole life. Started with a tier one, went to Honda Motor, and had the difficult duty of managing the Caribbean as my very first job, which was good. But then I got promoted and had all of Latin America. And that was quite interesting in the mid-90s when, the Shining Path controlled Peru. The drug cartels were fighting it out in Colombia. You know, Central America was one civil war after another between Nicaragua and El Salvador, all this stuff going on. So, yeah, lots of travel in the bullet and bomb-proof cars back then. Kind of ever since then, though, I've been doing kind of technology startups and in the automotive space, and got into the automotive telematics, you know, connected car stuff way back in 1999, kind of with the founding members of Wireless Car. And then we went off and sold that. I think that's owned by Volkswagen these days. Ran kind of connected car sales at Jasper. And we sold that company to Cisco for $1.5 billion. And had a couple other startups, some good, some bad. And then we started Preact, which was all about developing a low-cost LiDAR solution, primarily for automotive. At least that was how we started. Since then, though, there's a lot more use cases outside of automotive. And so, honestly, we're probably 80% non-automotive these days. And where we are in automotive, it's more in the heavy trucking side, actually. Been kind of where we've had success. So anyways, that's me in a nutshell.
Perfect. So let's jump right in. I know you were at CES. I was at CES 2024 here just a few months ago or a month ago. And I have to say, Paul, I still feel every other store or every other exhibit was either a LiDAR or something with AI. So I'm just going to point it right out or throw it right out to you to answer, because I think others kind of see that as well. Over the last 2 to 3 years at CES and in other events, right, every other booth, every other exhibit, another LiDAR with supposedly something, yet another better, faster.
Yeah.
Whatever, higher capable, better to integrate, more capable AI, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Product. Tell me, do we really need that many LiDAR companies?
No.
Is there really that much difference? What am I missing here?
Yeah, no, God, no, we don't. Luckily, Preact, for better or worse, you know, we kind of came late to the game. And so we knew there's already 60 or 70 people trying to do long-range automotive LiDAR. I wasn't a big believer in kind of the when self-driving vehicles were going to get started. I had come out of that space. I did 18 months at a startup doing high-definition mapping for autonomous vehicles, and I could see the technical deficit to get those things in a cost-effective and functionally effective role was still, you know, decades away. So when we founded Preact, we went after existing market, you know, the short-range sensing, typically controlled by, you know, RGB cameras, ultrasonic sensors, and short-range radar. You know, $30 billion existing market versus long-range LiDAR, which their existing market was zero, literally zero. And even today, you know, how much is it? It's a few, you know, altogether.
Small, relatively.
$10, $20 million a year in revenue. I mean, it's nothing. It's just minuscule, you know. Okay, how many self-driving cars are on the road today? You know, not a lot. So anyway, so yes, there's way too many. And you see a lot of them trying to pivot, kind of like we did. Like, oh, there's cool stuff that can use LiDAR. The problem is a lot of those are still, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a piece. You know, because they're not. One of the things I want to talk about today is some of these applications that are good for LiDAR, like great. Now, you know, you'll see LiDAR in a lot of airports and big train stations and that, and they're doing people counting, people tracking, kind of operational efficiency related things. But you know, you don't need a million LiDAR to do that in an airport, you know. And you need all different flavors of LiDAR. So we're, you know, we're not a spinning LiDAR. We're, you know, we have a field of view and it's just a solid state LiDAR. So we're good in hallways and entrances, and things like that, you know, whereas a big spinning LiDAR is good, like in the ceiling of the main terminal, being able to see wide and far. So it takes a mix. Anyway, back to your question, the original question, are there too many? Absolutely. Even in our space, there's still too many. I think I was approached by as many investment bankers saying, hey, so-and-so is kind of for sale, you know, or yeah, you have any interest or know anybody? So you're going to see a lot fewer. I will add, well, I agree with what you said, that the thing that wasn't this kind of conspicuously absent, or the, you know, for the last few years, 4D radar was all the rage.
And
true. You know, and it's going to be as good as LiDAR, you know, but, you know, not have any effects from weather because it's radar. There was like none of that now. And I know, you know, talking to OEMs, they're like, yeah, it doesn't really exist yet. You know, we still can't get samples from people, you know? So, that was kind of the biggest surprise to me. Cause I thought 4D radar held great promise, and it seems to be kind of disappearing for some reason, or I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right with that, Paul. I agree. Now that I'm thinking about that, it was definitely something over the last several years was always there. Mm-hmm. And this year, yeah, I can't remember seeing one. I'm sure they were there, but as you said, nowhere near as prominent.
Yeah.
But then let's jump in what you just said, right? And again, we're reimagining mobility here in this podcast. So you said your sensor more sort of replacing existing short range, right? So radar, cameras and ultrasonic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So explain then to our listeners what makes your solution, what makes LiDAR or your solution, that's mine, better than what's existing, that coming from an OEM, working in the supply base, right? I know how OEMs look at it. Yeah, you might be cheaper. Yeah, your LiDAR might be the future, but you know what? We know cameras, we know radar, we know ultrasonic for the last 10, 15 plus years, and we're comfortable, it's cheap, we know how to deal with it. So why should they replace it? Share a little bit of what you're seeing there.
Yeah, that's you know, like you and I, you know, having been around that space in automotive forever, you know, OEMs and tier ones, just, you know, it's worse than trying to move a battleship. You know, they do not change, you know, and if it's not broken, you're not going to replace something, you know. Ultrasound, I'll kind of explain the technology in really simple terms. So if you think of like a camera in terms of resolution and that, if you're, you know, your camera, you have 10 megapixel or whatever it might be. Well, ultrasound is so low resolution, it's like a single pixel. It just shows there is a blob somewhere. Couldn't tell you where it is, but it's just kind of in my range. you know, could be an inch away, could be 5 feet away. You know, it's just like a single pixel.
Something is there.
Yeah, radar will get you the range, but it's still just, there's a blob somewhere out there. And that, and then there's lots of other issues with radar. Anyway, and a camera is great, you know, shows you in five megapixels, this typical automotive RGB camera. So tons of resolution, but it needs illumination to see, you know, can't see in the dark, whereas the others can, you know, weather affects it, shadows and reflections trick it. You know, you can use AI, which requires a lot of processing power and would cost money, you know, kind of the Tesla model. But even that gets fooled, you know, 5% of the time, you know. That's why Tesla's autopilot doesn't work all the time, you know, and isn't full self-driving, because it's still a two-dimensional image that, you know, you don't have depth with. You can kind of insinuate depth. And there's a lot of tricks that work,
yep,
95% of the time. So that's the thing. And LiDAR has much higher resolution, not as high as like a camera, but every pixel that comes back has like an X, Y, and Z coordinate. You know the depth and the exact position of that pixel. So you can see edges and you can compare it. You can see the curb of the road versus whatever the object is, and that it doesn't need illumination, but it's affected by weather, especially like rain and fog are bad for LiDAR. It really reduces the range because each little bit of water is like a retroreflector, you know, so that the light going into it gets reflected back, you know. So if it's raining hard or very foggy, not a lot of your light is going out. So, yeah, that's a problem.
Well, so then, again, going back, why then do we, I mean, you explain now essentially with the technology advantages, at least maybe substitute a LiDAR for a ultrasonic, right? You may still need a camera. I mean, I still need a radar for some of the weather or other related things. But why then, explain a little bit, why don't we see more LiDAR solutions to replace, let's say, my parking sensors that I need, or my backup system that maybe cameras shouldn't be necessarily based on because of cross traffic, because of somebody sitting, you know, a toy, a small child, all these scenarios that we're all very familiar with. Why don't we see more OEMs pushing for this? We just haven't seen it come out yet. Is it really, yeah, there's a 2, 3, 5, maybe 10% improvement, but it doesn't warrant the new system. Share a little bit, why are we struggling not to reimagine mobility, but to create the new mobility ecosystem as it relates at least,
yeah,
these type of sensors? What do you see, Paul?
Yeah, well, it's a couple things. One, it's, again, you know, it's a lot of work to change, both for the tier one who's building these systems and then the OEM. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know. The other thing is a good example. I've met multiple times over the years with like the head of safety at one of the big three OEMs in Detroit. And at the end of every meeting, it's almost like it's like programmed into their corporate culture. He'll say, if it costs 5 cents, wait, how's it put? I don't want to screw this up. We are not going to spend 5 cents more than it takes to meet the federal safety requirements. So if we've got it met and your solution is better, but it costs 5 cents more, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the head of safety, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, we see, I mean, the statement doesn't surprise me, right? It may surprise some of our listeners, but it's in some cases, innovation or the reimagine of mobility is stifled by the fact that there's a law. And in other cases, the law is there and it almost pulls innovation away from other areas that the industry feels it's could be more productive, right? We have this discussion now again with EVs, hybrids, and then ICEs, right? Where regulation says one thing, companies and technology experts say something different, at least slightly different, yet there's a conflict, I guess, mm-hmm. with regulation. Yeah. So then maybe jumping back to what you earlier talked about, you know, airports and hallways and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Contrast that industry call with us a little bit as we look at mobility that we just talked about. And again, yeah. if your latest statement, a perfect description of some of the challenges the mobility industry faces, which is regulations, both good and maybe bad in some cases. How is it then in the security and in the monitoring industry? I'm not sure I use the right words here for those industries, but those other industries you mentioned, how is it there?
Yeah. So let me, I want to go back to my past statement because I don't want, you know, this anybody to think I'm kind of bashing this one kind of safety executive, because it's people don't want to pay for safety too. So it's not, I don't blame the OEM for not wanting to spend any more money because, you know, it's like insurance. You know, you don't think you need it. You hate buying insurance. Most people don't have insurance, you know, like life insurance or that sort of thing, because they're like, you know, it's expensive. I'm not going to die next year, you know, that sort of thing. So I don't blame them, you know, because it doesn't, countless studies show safety doesn't sell. So, so that's kind of a good transition into the other markets, because there it's, you're talking about very simple ROI models that these guys share. Like a good example is an area we're working in, and kind of like technically it'd be called like facilities management. Mm-hmm. You know, that makes you think of like janitors and, you know, people that clean a school at night or whatever. And it is that, but it's everything. It's the HVAC systems, it's electrical, it's everything that takes to run a facility or building or that. A good example is like airports. Airports are all about efficiency and being able to reduce costs. And so, and their business is very spurty. You know, a plane from China lands and all of a sudden there's, you know, 300 people in a bulk, you know, just attack a bathroom or the bathrooms right there, destroy them and then move on, you know, maybe go through the gift shop, you know, that sort of thing on their way to, you know, wherever. And then nobody for an hour in that. And so how do you staff for that kind of traffic, you know, both cleaning as well as the fast, the, you know, the quick service restaurants along the way in that. So this allows you, if you're kind of monitoring people and you see, so we have a solution for bathrooms. Now you're not allowed to put a camera in a bathroom, but you can put a LIDAR because it's just a point cloud. So it's GDPR compliant, which is a European thing about data privacy, but it applies in the US too. And all you're doing is, you know, how many people have come in, you can see how messy it is. You can see if people have slipped and fallen. You can see if there's like a homeless person, you know, just camped out, you know, you can tell if the bathroom's empty at night. You know, so you don't have to, somebody doesn't have to actually like physically walk the floor and check before you close the building. Maybe it's a school or a high rise, that sort of thing. So it's stuff like that, you know. There, you know, it's just a easy ROI model for that.
Sure.
You know. Yeah, so we're all on that. We do cargo management. So we put a little LIDAR in a 53-foot trailer that goes behind the semi, and it snaps a picture of what the cargo load is. Not really a picture, you know, it's a LIDAR white cloud, and it measures the volume. So when you open that door, it says, oh, there was, you know, X cubic feet of volume taken and a certain amount of floor space open. And then it say like how much cargo went off and on during that stop. And then when the doors close again, how much cargo is there? So that helps prevent kind of theft and shrinkage and settles disputes when, say, you're, I don't know, Amazon, and you dropped off
sure.
5 pallets of dog food at the Walmart dock, and Walmart calls up and said, hey, I only got 4 pallets. They can go, no, 5 pallets worth of cargo got off. So that means probably somebody on your end is, you know, shrinkage, you know, as they call it.
Interesting
stuff, you know. Trying to think, patient monitoring is a big area for us. Mm-hmm. So nursing homes for like really older, sick people with dementia, you know, they only get checked a couple times a day, you know, and again, you don't want a camera watching your 94-year-old grandmother all day. That's really creepy. But if you just have this indistinguishable point cloud that just on the edge can say, oh, you know, my grandmother just fell on the ground and she's laying there, it alerts the nurse's station, you know, takes care of it, that sort of thing, you know. You know how often that a nurse or somebody came and checked on your grandmother, that sort of thing. So there's lots of things around productivity, efficiency, and that. And, you know, they don't have the 3-year design in cycle that a car company has,
sure.
You know.
Yeah. No, it's a very interesting point. I never thought about the privacy. It's a very good point, a great advantage from the get-go.
Yeah. Now, you know, and our LiDAR is very low cost, you know, no unit costs $350, and it goes down from there. You know, the cheapest kind of, you know, I don't want to mention names, kind of, but the big LiDAR companies, you know, it's probably $2,000 is like as cheap as you get for one unit. You know, most of them are in the kind of $4,000 or $5,000 if you ever
want a
Velodyne puck, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Let's go quickly. 2 more questions. I want to quickly go back to the statement you made that safety doesn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, and at the same time, I don't, right? And the reason I don't is I was very surprised to hear that my 20-year-old daughter, about 6 months ago, she said, I'm going to buy myself a Volvo. I'm like, a Volvo? Where is that coming from? Nothing against Volvo. Yeah. Like some of their cars, right? We work for them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why a Volvo in the U.S., right? It's not like a major brand. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, because it's safety. I'm all about safety, Dad. I'm like, okay. So, I mean, you and I probably know this for years. When we grew up, Volvo was considered the safety car, right? And I was very surprised that my daughter, even though we don't talk much Volvo in this household here, that Volvo still with the college age kids is a safety. And then I see certainly in other places, I mean, you just saw GM, right, with Cruise, very concerned about the safety, obviously, and the reputation and how we progress autonomous driving, very different facets there as well, but still safety. And I think when it comes to now the sort of the reversal from, hey, we want to all drive in an autonomous vehicle to, hey, we all want to drive in a safe vehicle with level two plus, maybe level 3 ADAS or autonomous systems. And it's because we can make it safer, we can make it better. So I want to bring this back and say, do you see, because I mean, your device is a quote unquote safety device, either in the nursing home, right, or in a car. Do you really see that safety going forward as we look forward, as you look forward over the next 5 years, is not coming back again and playing a much bigger role in selling a car? Or do you feel like it's just always going to be something you expect a certain level of safety, which regulation will cover, everything else people don't care about?
Yeah. I mean, kind of the latter. Although, you know, there is a certain percentage of the population that does, you know, buy their life insurance regularly and considers a Volvo. You know, I have no idea. You know, I'm in the auto industry, like, you know, hard for me to believe that a Volvo is actually safer than any other car now. But they spent, you know, our childhoods, you know, they spent decades and they went after that niche hard.
Yeah.
You know, and they were a little player and they were the only ones going after that niche. So I think their reputation has just lasted. But, you know, as an engineer and knowing the auto industry, I think most cars, you know, pretty darn similarly safe. But you know, that's good. You know, there's a reason each brand sells. You know, there's
that's true.
Some reputation there, and
marketing, right?
And they have safety, so good for them.
Yeah.
All right, then, Paul. Last question.
Yep.
What's going to be the next car you buy, and why?
Tough call. I haven't actually had my own car for a couple of years now, and I kind of enjoy it. I have some collect, you know, I have my AMG Gullwing and, you know, some exotics, but I don't have a daily driver. But I've been looking for an EV that will also fit my bicycle. So the new Macan EV, the Porsche Macan EV, I've got my eye on that one. So I want to go up electric. And I know some of my friends will cringe when I say that because they're diehard internal combustion guys. But that's the only one right now that strikes my fancy. Tesla's got great cars. I don't find them attractive at all. And I'm such a car guy. I have to love the look of my car.
You're still a design guy. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, again, Tesla, probably the best technology, but God, they're just not attractive cars to me.
Understood.
I wish, you know, because that's probably what I'd buy.
Okay.
Anyways.
Well, that's good. It's a perfect answer. So, Paul, thank you very much for your insight. Very insightful, very educational for me, too, to see those other areas that, again, you explained LiDAR is using, and certainly also the perspective on the automotive space with short-range LiDAR that can replace short-range radar. Very interesting. Thank you, Paul.